Warning: The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of unprotected talk, borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
It is Michael Savage Live. I will not be talking about football. I will not be talking about the NFL. It's not my cup of tea. I have no idea why anyone in politics would talk about it. But let's put that aside. Tonight's show is about a tale of two cities, New York City versus San Francisco. Now, there's a lot in common in both cities. Both cities are one-party systems, ruined and run by a Democrat machine that is more powerful than the Tammany Hall corrupt machine that ran New York for over 80 years. But there's one big difference. New York has a U.S. attorney named Preet Bharara, who has just brought New York Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver in on an indictment saying that he lined his pockets with nearly $4 million in bribes and kickbacks in an abuse of power dating to at least the year 2000. You have to understand that this guy Silver is the most powerful Democrat in the state next to the governor Cuomo, who I suspect is not a happy man today, because if they bring a guy like this in, Silver, who's 70 years old, he's going to fold like an accordion and bring down others. That's number one. But I said the show is about a tale of two cities. The other city is San Francisco, another corrupt city, perhaps more corrupt than New York, a one-party state running from Sacramento to San Francisco to Los Angeles without a voice of opposition. The difference is there's no attorney in this state, in this city, there's no U.S. attorney here, who can touch the untouchables. And secondly, unlike New York, which has newspapers, which vary slightly from the Democrat socialist point of view, San Francisco, Los Angeles have no newspapers to speak of. They will not take on the untouchables. And that is why I call today's show A Tale of Two Cities. Now, many of you don't know who Sheldon Silver is, and you probably would not want to know what this man is, nor how he is, but it's important that you know who he is. He is the second most powerful Democrat in New York State under the governor, Cuomo. He was indicted, hands behind his back, taken away in a car to federal court yesterday. Why? They say that he lined his pockets with $4 million in bribes and kickbacks dating to at least 2000. He was hit with five felony charges, including fraud, extortion, and conspiracy, that each carry up to 20 years behind bars. Silver, age 70, surrendered at FBI headquarters in Lower Manhattan at 8 a.m. and later took a ride of shame to the nearby federal courthouse. He was seen seated uncomfortably in the back seat of a federal unmarked car surrounded by federal agents, a black fedora askew on his head, and his hands cuffed behind his back. Now, this is a stunning arrest. While here in San Francisco, there have been whispers for at least 25 years of similar, if not greater, corruption. And yet no U.S. attorney has taken on any of the corrupt in the state of California, so far as I know. But at the bottom of this hour, we're going to have an investigative reporter on, a very brave investigative reporter named Peter Byrne, who is concerned about United States Senator Dianne Feinstein's longtime conflict of interest with her husband's businesses. And he's going to talk about that. And we're going to ask him, why is the New York attorney going after corruption in New York, but the San Francisco attorney is ignoring the massive corruption in California state politics, not limited to one or two individuals? This is not to say that there's any evidence that Feinstein has done anything wrong. This is not to suggest in any way that Mr. Blum is anything but a very honest businessman. But Byrne's series will investigate how Feinstein's husband has been selling post offices at bargain basement prices, often to his own business partners. You see, Richard Blum is the chairman of CBRE Group, Inc., the largest commercial real estate firm in the world. In 2011, the U.S. Postal Service awarded Feinstein's husband, Blum, an exclusive contract to sell off post offices in cities and towns across America. Mr. Byrne's investigation will detail the many apparent conflicts of interest driving the CBRE deals right here on the Savage Nation, where we will not talk about deflated footballs. So here's the question. How is it that U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara can take down a man as powerful as Sheldon Silver, while here in San Francisco, the U.S. attorney takes nobody down? And they were both appointed by Obama. That's the curious part about all of it. You see, we need a Preet Bharara for U.S. Attorney General. I hope that if the Republicans have the brains, they will reach across the aisle to an uncorruptible U.S. attorney like Preet Bharara and nominate him to be the U.S. Attorney General. Boy, could we use that. So who is U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara, who brought down the most powerful, the second most powerful Democrat in New York, at least indicted him? We'll see how far that goes. Well, let's look at him. He's a Democrat appointed by President Obama. His father was raised in a home in India without plumbing, and he brought the family to New Jersey when Mr. Bharara was just an infant. And the son went on to earn degrees from Harvard and Columbia Law before going to work as counsel to Senator Chuck Schumer, Democrat, New York. Mr. Bharara is the married father of three. He's being compared to Rudy Giuliani, the mob busting federal prosecutor who became mayor. And yet, Bharara has no past that could bring him down the way, let us say, Elliot Spitzer was brought down. You have to know that Bahara's conviction rate carries a huge populist appeal in New York and elsewhere, but it does not play well with the Wall Street money crew. Nevertheless, the people love him. So now let's look at the picture from a national point of view. And that is, why was Silver suddenly brought down when people knew this was going on and suspected it for decades now? How did it suddenly happen? And how does Silver's arrest threaten Cuomo? And how does this threaten the entire Democrat machine across America, which is far more corrupt than Tammany Hall ever was? Well, let's look back a little bit. Governor Cuomo shut this corruption investigation down last year. Did you know that? Just when they were about to bring down Silver, Governor Cuomo shut the investigation down. Now, let's look into it a little further. You ready for this one? The crazed mayor of New York City, de Blasio, still supports Silver. But here's something you may not know. Obama does not. The federal government does not. Holder and the feds are not in Silver's camp. Now the question is why? Could this be related to Silver's relationship to Israel? You do know that Obama has no love lost on Netanyahu and Israel. But Silver seems to be somewhat deeply related to Israel in terms of his ethnic ties, his religious ties, and perhaps even his fundraising ties. Now, as you know, Obama loses no love on Netanyahu and Israel. That we know. So could it be that Owen Holder gave a green light when the Republicans said yes to Netanyahu? Or is this just a coincidence? Well, we don't know, but we're just asking the questions. Will it touch Mr. Bacala in Albany? We don't know that either. We do know this, that this is Naan versus matzah, and Naan seems to be winning. This is Curry versus Cholentz, and Curry seems to be beating Cholentz, if you get the joke. Now, the part of this that bothers me the most is the phoniness of this guy Silver. You know, none of us like hypocrisy. We all hate it. And we're pretty harsh on Islamists who claim to be religious and yet kill in the name of religion. But I myself am disgusted by people who claim to be religious and rob in the name of religion. We've seen the Jimmy Swaggerts go down, who would cry on stage and take down millions of dollars from the poor Christian believers. But what do we do with a man like Sheldon Silver, who is allegedly an Orthodox Jew, who wears the garb of the Orthodox, who apparently comports himself like the Orthodox, but has been accused of carrying away bags of money into secret bank accounts, all laid out in the New York Post today in their investigation? This is the part that bothers me. And I can't wait to see the rabbis who are soon going to be brought out screaming that he is a victim of anti-Semitism. Or they'll bring up the Holocaust and in the name of dead Jewish people who suffered deaths we can not even imagine. They will use the Holocaust to try to defend Silver because he wears a black hat. And he is part of the same, let us say, organizational mentality. This is something that's always bothered me, and I hope it doesn't happen. But let me ask you something. Anyone out there on the Savage Nation, are you as concerned as I am by corruption in New York, California, and your own state? Are you as concerned that the Republicans have done nothing since they have taken power to initiate one investigation of corruption? I am. I'm quite concerned because the history of this nation is doomed. It is doomed as sure as I'm sitting here, unless the Republican Party, which now has the majority, suddenly recognizes how vast the corruption is both in the Democrat and the Republican Party itself. So again, the lead story is Sheldon Silver, second most powerful Democrat in New York, arrested for taking $4 million in bribes and kickbacks. And now we look at how Silver's arrest threatens Cuomo, according to Aaron Short and Bob Fredericks of the New York Post. So let me read a little about this. Governor Andrew Cuomo's decision to pull the plug on his corruption-fighting Moreland Commission will have repercussions far beyond Thursday's indictment of Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver, insiders said. The move, some said, raised questions about Cuomo's commitment to rooting out Albany's pay-to-play culture and could harm his efforts to cast himself as an anti-corruption reformer. It has a huge impact, it says. U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara confirmed that this is a result of the Moreland investigation, which begs the question whether or not the governor knew about this information when he decided to disband the panel. That has political and legal implications, says GOP consultant Jessica Proud to the New York Post. Many insiders said they would be stunned if Cuomo himself got ensnared in a federal probe. But they said his decision to shut down the panel after it subpoenaed Silver's and other assembly members' financial records looked like business as usual after the feds were able to take the same information and build a case against Silver. And they also went on to say, if I were the governor, I'd be keeping a very wary eye on this U.S. attorney. He certainly is still looking into the Moreland Commission work, and he said he would finish up its work and also at how it got knocked off. Both are potential hazards for the Democrat governor of New York, Cuomo. Democratic political consultant George Arts called the developments, quote, an earthquake of seismic proportions that would make short and long-term governing difficult. The consultant said, I don't think anyone is happy in the political establishment, given the repercussions to other members of the legislature and other elected officials in high positions. Hinting at more investigations to come, Bharara told a news conference to stay tuned. That remark, the consultant said, will roil the waters in Albany. Meanwhile, Cuomo denied he made a mistake in shutting down the panel in a March 2014 deal with assembly leaders to pass financial disclosure rules. But the indictment, he admitted, tarnished all in the Capitol. A Cuomo ally predicted this arrest would stall the state budget. He said this, it screws up the whole session. Who are you dealing with now? The budget is due in a month and a week. The question is, who is in charge of the assembly? The official said. Now, this is a huge story in New York, but it should be as huge a story in California, San Francisco, Los Angeles, where the corruption stinks to high heaven. Everyone is living here with a straight mind, knows how bad and how corrupt this state is. And yet the U.S. attorney appointed in New York went after the corruption, while the U.S. attorney appointed in San Francisco goes after nothing corrupt. Why? You tell me the difference between this tale of two cities. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Hey, our Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust for wealth insurance, gold and silver. Call 800-BUY-CO-I-N. 25 minutes after the hour, you're listening to the Savage Nation. We're not talking about deflated footballs. We're talking about the deflated assembly speaker in New York State and the ramifications going across the Democrat socialist corrupt machine in the United States of America, which is now out of control with its arrogance of power. It has never been this powerful. There have never been states that have been single one-party states as we have now in California and New York, and yet a Democrat U.S. attorney appointed by President Obama is so honest and so incorruptible that he brought down the second most powerful Democrat in New York State, at least on an indictment. We'll see where it goes, okay? Meanwhile, this guy, to be put into a federal car with his hands behind his back, with his black hat on, you know, like he's being picked on again, is unbelievable. Arrested for taking $4 million in bribes and kickbacks. But if you look at the New York Post story, at the actual indictment, your hair will stand up. If you look at the records of the real estate firm's payments, by looking at the S.Silva ESQ account, your hair will stand up. If you could look at what this man did in collecting more than $3 million in legal fees by steering asbestos-related cancer cases from a leading Manhattan oncologist to the Weitz and Luxembourg law firm, in exchange, they say, Silva allegedly funneled two state research grants of $250,000 each to Dr. Robert Taub, along with other official favors. It gets worse. You ready for this? Silva was also accused of scheming with his former assembly counsel, J. Arthur Goldberg, to split the fees paid to Goldberg's tiny tax firm by two real estate developers, including one identified by sources as Leonard Litwin, the state's largest single political donor. Silva pocketed $700,000 from the scam and sold out tenants during the 2011 renewal of the New York City rent regulations. Now, let's pause on that. This is typically Democrat, liberal, socialist, double-talking, double-dealing thieves. They do an asbestos abatement scam, and then they sell the tenants out while saying they're working for the tenants. This is what the global warming scam is all about. It's like reading about that guy in Davos who flies in a private jet with four nannies, right? And then says that people should do with less in the world. Meanwhile, he owns estates all over the world worth hundreds of millions of dollars. He's telling you to do with less. What they're meeting in Davos about is how to screw you out of tens of billions of dollars under a global warming scam. If I were ever to stop one of these guys and say, do you know anything about the Vostok ice core sample? They wouldn't know what I was talking about. But they'll tell you, you know what, Savage? I really don't care. It's good to know that there is no global warming, but we're about to make billions off it, so drop dead. You get it? If not, you're going to get it real soon.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. We're talking about A Tale of Two Cities, and that is an astounding story when you think about it. You have a Democrat U.S. attorney in New York, Preet Bharara, who brings down, at least indicts, the second most powerful Democrat in New York state government, alleging that he took over $4 million in bribes and kickbacks, pretty well spelled out in the New York Post. Meanwhile, the U.S. attorney in San Francisco, so far as I know, has not indicted a single Democrat, even though everyone living in the state knows it's the most corrupt state in America. It makes New Orleans look like a straight-laced city compared to what goes on here. At least that's what I feel. That's what I think. Now, what is the reason for this? Well, for one, New York has a newspaper business that is quite varied or diverse. San Francisco has no newspapers to speak of. They're arms of the Democrat machine. But let's go to the only journalist I have found in the state of California willing to put, let us say, himself out there to investigate what he thinks is corruption in the state of California. And that is the gentleman, national award-winning investigative journalist, Peter Byrne. Peter, thank you for joining us tonight on the Savage Nation. Are you with us?
I am with you. Hi.
Peter, now you've been covering the Feinstein-Blum fortune for quite a while, haven't you?
Since about 2006.
These allegations, are they based upon anything other than anger towards her because she's so successful? Is there any real evidence that her husband has benefited from her activities as a U.S. senator?
Well, first of all, let me say I harbor no ill will towards either Senator Feinstein nor her husband. I think that, you know, I often say when I'm talking about people in political power that use their power to enrich themselves, that it's actually the public's fault, you know, because if you put a plate of hamburger in front of a feral cat, what's it going to do? It's going to eat the hamburger. We keep putting money that's easy to access, shall I say, in front of these politicians who are basically just narcissistic kind of feral cats, and then we say we're surprised at what they do. I mean, you know, you talk about the U.S. Attorney in San Francisco. It's very interesting. This Hage, I think is how you say your name. She came directly into her office from being a partner at Orrick, Herrington, and Sutcliffe, which is one of the big political power law firms in California, and it's a lobbyist organization. In the beginning of your show, I was listening to it, and I did a quick web search, and I came up with a Orrick press release from 2010 that says Orrick advises CBRE on sale of site in Olympic Park.
So wait, the very same firm that advises Blum, Feinstein's husband, has now handpicked the U.S. attorney?
Yes. A partner in that firm who has CBRE, who Blum until recently was the chairperson of, as a client, is now the U.S. Attorney for the Northern
California. How is that even possible? Isn't that an overt conflict of interest for her to have been appointed the U.S. attorney?
Well, the conflict of interest would happen in whether or not she took actions that would benefit her former law partners, because, you know, undoubtedly...
Let's get down to the chase here. I'm sorry to cut you short, but Mr. Byrne, you've alleged that the husband of U.S. Senator Dianne Feinstein of California has been selling post offices at bargain basement prices, often to his own business partners. Is that true?
Yes, I didn't actually just allege it. I actually proved it with public records. I published an e-book in the fall of 2013 that you can get on Amazon. It's called Going Postal, How Senator Dianne Feinstein's Husband Sells Post Offices to His Friends Cheap. And the e-book actually links to hundreds and hundreds of public records that back up every single fact in it. So there's no allegations in it. It's just a factual account.
Let's clear it for the national audience. This is a big accusation, and you're saying it's based on records. So how did Feinstein's husband, Blum, get the contract to sell off these post offices?
Well, Blum's entire business, he runs an investment bank called Blum Capital Partners. Its mode of operation is to access public funds in companies that it buys and invests in. Now, they got CBRE, he's been the chairperson of and one of the largest shareholders of, along with Goldman Sachs and a few other firms, for many years. CBRE is the largest general-purpose real estate firm in the world. And for many years, it did have contracts with the Post Office and with the General Services Administration, which operates federal government real estate, to do some management. But in 2011, the Post Office, for some reason, decided to give all of its real estate business to one firm. And it basically invited six firms to bid for it. The bids were not awarded on the basis of low price, which would have been, you know, the amount of the commission. They actually refused to say why the contract was awarded to CBRE, but it was. So essentially, they gave all of their business to CBRE in perpetuity, and the value.
What is the value to the Blum firm for the sale of these U.S. postal offices?
Well, let's put it this way: the value of the postal real estate portfolio is $85 billion, okay?
Did you say billion?
$85 billion.
That's the value of the real estate of the old post offices that the post office is selling off, right?
I doubt they're going to sell all of it, but that is the total value of their real estate portfolio, $85 billion.
Wait, you're confusing me. What's valued at $85 billion? All the post offices in the U.S.?
All the post offices and all of the parking lots and warehouses that the Postal Service owns. They are a huge owner.
I understand, but how much are they selling off through Blum's firm?
Well, that remains to be seen. They've sold off about 60 properties or so in the first several years of the contract, but there's nothing to stop them from selling off as much as they want.
Let's say I wanted a bid on a local post office that's up for sale. How would I even know that it's up for sale, and who would I go to buy it?
Well, the only way you would be able to find out about it is to go to CBRE. They have a website that you can look at that tells you what post offices they're offering for sale, but then you have to go to CBRE. And they not only are the real estate agent for the post office, but they're often the real estate agent for the person that is buying it, which violates the arm's length transactional.
So, Mr. Byrne, are you saying that some of the post offices that the U.S. government sold off through Dianne Feinstein's husband's real estate firm went to his friends?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it went to business partners of his investment bank, Blum Capital Partners, and also to business partners of CBRE. I show in my book, Going Postal, which you can get on Amazon easily. It's only $2.99 for the e-book. And you can also get it in print if you don't like Kindles. I show 52 deals. A good number of them, the properties were sold by CBRE far, far, far under their fair market values.
Oh.
Under their actual appraised values to their own clients or to real estate partnerships in which they had a vested interest. And we're talking about, you know, they get 6% interest when they get the buyers and the sellers' commission on this. But 6% interest on these sales, you know, that's peanuts compared to where the real money is. The real money in this has come from selling properties vastly under their fair market value to entities in which they have a vested interest.
Well, let's say anyone listening to this show wants to buy an old post office and they want to live in it or whatever. You're saying that it's so rigged they couldn't even buy it because it's through Blum's firm?
Well, if you're friends with them and you've got enough money, you could go to them and ask to buy it. But
Richard, hold it. Mr. Byrne, have you investigated this cozy relationship between Senator Dianne Feinstein and her husband's business dealings other than in the real estate sector?
Oh, yeah. In 2007, I did a big expose that was printed in a lot of newspapers on showing that Dianne Feinstein, as the chairperson of the Military Construction Subcommittee of the Appropriations Committee of the United States Senate, steered $1.5 billion worth of contracts to two firms, Perini Corporation and URS Corporation, which at the time were basically owned and operated by her husband, Richard Blum.
So he was a military construction contractor as well.
And weapons as well.
Here's an odd part. When you started this series, you were picked up by the L.A. Times back in the mid-2000s, I remember. Why is it that the California newspapers have shut down all of your findings?
Well, the San Francisco Chronicle is basically a newsletter for the Feinstein, Willie Brown political machine. Interestingly enough, when I did an expose in 2009 showing that the University of California had steered $1 billion worth of investments into Blum's firms while he was a regent.
It's that bad. So would you say that the things you've mentioned seem to me almost larger than that of Sheldon Silver in New York State?
Well,
yet there's not even a hint of it in California. Why is that?
Let me tell you the story here, Michael. You know, so a reporter who does the education beat at the Chronicle, Nanette Asimov, called me up and said she wanted to do a story on my story. I said, I don't trust you guys to do a story on it, but you can hire me to write one and do that. So I wrote a story about how the University of California steered $1 billion worth of capital into Blum's firms, or where he had interests. And I gave it to them, they edited it, and then they didn't print it. And month after month went by, and month after month went by, and they wouldn't print it. And so I would call up the editor, who's now the chief editor of the Chronicle, her name was Audrey somebody, and she basically said, I'm not scared of Richard Blum, but she admitted to me that Blum had been calling her and threatening her if they ran with that article, and they never did it. I eventually outed them, and
you're a very brave man, given the level of corruption in California and the ruthlessness of the individuals that you have chosen to expose. Have you had any incidents in your life that are worrisome?
No, not really. I mean, basically, if I was in Mexico, I'd probably be dead. But here, you know, there's...
Well, Mexico is almost here now, so I'd be very cautious, Peter Byrne. This is a shocking revelation, even to me, and I thought I kind of knew a lot about this. I had no idea it was this blatantly corrupt. It seems to me that they feel they're so above the law that they're untouchable. Is that what you're saying?
I wrote about the whole thing. It was in the San Francisco Bay Guardian before it collapsed. But you know, the media, as you pointed out, in California, which is basically just the L.A. Times, the Sacramento Bee, and the Los Angeles Times, I mean, they're just even shadows of their former selves. I mean, they're just like...
Well, you said something that the Chronicle, which doesn't exist anymore, it's a newsletter of the Willie Brown, Dianne Feinstein, Pelosi machine, which is true. It is absolutely true. There is no newspaper in San Francisco. It's gone. There is no newspaper business here whatsoever. But why does the left, which is allegedly so sensitive to powerful people who are corrupt, why does the left, who constantly talks about the 1%, et cetera, why do they never talk about the situations you're mentioning today on this program?
Well, it depends on what you're defining as the left. I mean, Democrats and Republicans to me seem to be just two sides of the same coin. So I don't actually call Feinstein a liberal. I call her a neocon for the most part. If you look at her policies, they're pretty much in line with, you know, George Bush's policies or any other conservative policies as you go along. People like to single her out, but Pelosi and Feinstein to me are not leftists. They're just, you know,
well, we could spend an hour on that one. I totally disagree with you on that statement. But I'm curious, where are all the loudmouth street radicals who are so outraged by so many things saying anything about this corruption, Peter?
Some of the loudmouth street radicals do. I mean, like Code Pink and a few of these other radical organizations picked up on the Feinstein stuff back in 2007 that I was printing and had a demonstration at her house and then around a post office. A bunch of people that don't want post offices to be closed went to Blum Capital in San Francisco and had a big street demonstration a couple years ago. And then there's been a lot of demonstrations by the left around these post office things. But, you know, part of the problem with that is that a lot of the people that care about the post offices tend to be over about 50 years old. So the youth aren't too involved.
I see. And the youth doesn't really care about corruption. All right, Peter Byrne, your book is called what, please?
It's called Going Postal, How U.S. Senator Dianne Feinstein's Husband Sells Post Offices to His Friends Cheap. You can get it on Amazon easily.
Peter, thanks for being with us tonight or today. Hi. On the Savage Nation. That brings us to the break time here. 48, 49 minutes after the hour. I'll be right back on the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
My Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com. It's the only company I trust to protect my wealth. Call 800-BUY-COIN.
Hey, look. So when the speaker did this, is anything a surprise around here? No. It's hubris. To say, you know, I rule, I'll decide. What is the purpose of it? Is the purpose to come and talk about sanctions? To talk about a policy in opposition to the policy that our president has just put forth in his State of the Union
address? That's none other than the genius Nancy Pelosi. Just outraged that Netanyahu was invited by Republicans to address Congress when our president just put forth in his State of the Union address the fact that he will not sanction Iran. Will not sanction Iran? Now, why is that? So it just shows you that Democrat, Republican, it doesn't really matter at the end of the day. You know, what matters here is that the young people don't care about any of this. You know, I was asking, I bring up the case of Silver. A guy who was arrested for almost $4 million in kickbacks and hiding money. And I ask young guys, do you care about it? They say, not really. I said, why? They say, because we know all politicians are corrupt pieces of garbage. I mean, that's what they said to me in plain English. You want me to mince words? The young people feel that they're all corrupt. They know the country is going down because of the corruption. And they feel powerless to change it because the political system has rigor mortis. It is a corrupt system that is rotten to the core. That's what young people feel. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage. Warning. The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of unprotected thought, borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
It is Rock and Roll Friday on The Savage Nation. I wish it was as nice as it was when Eddie My Love was a number one hit on the charts, but it isn't. Maybe I've eaten from the apple of knowledge, and it's always been this way. But I kind of doubt that the corruption has been this bad. In my lifetime, I've never seen anything like it, and it's because of the death of the newspapers in America. Now, we're talking about a tale of two cities. In New York, the U.S. Attorney, Preet Bharara, brings down the second most powerful Democrat in the state, Sheldon Silver, on an indictment saying that he basically stole $4 million or received it. And you want to look at the PDF of the charges there. It was over 30 pages long. It's on michaelsavage.com. You got to believe this is really real. This was not done as a vendetta. While in California, I think the corruption is far worse, and yet there's been no indictments by the U.S. attorney out here. And I keep asking myself, in the tale of two cities, why is this so? Both U.S. attorneys were appointed by President Obama. Yet in New York, the attorney brings down a powerful Democrat, Sheldon Silver. And here in California, nothing happens under this so-called U.S. attorney, who came from one of San Francisco's biggest law firms, as though it's just a private fiefdom of that law firm. So what's the difference in these two cities? The answer is the newspapers. New York, while it's a liberal city for sure, still has viable newspapers in the form of the New York Daily Post and, of course, the New York Daily News. Now, the Daily News is probably left of center. The New York Post is probably a centrist newspaper, maybe a little to the right. The New York Times is what it is, as you well know. It's just in a world of its own, in a bubble of its own. But even they covered the scandal of Sheldon Silver. When have you last seen any scandal involving a Democrat in the state of California? I've seen none. Zero. Zero. It's never covered because there are no newspapers, and I think that's the primary difference. Having said that, I think we'll move on to other topics. If you want to learn more about it, you can look at the article in the New York Post about this amazing story of Sheldon Silver. And whether it will touch Governor Cuomo is anyone's guess. Here's one last note on it. In the Post, it says Albany lawmakers were left reeling from this indictment, with one Democratic operative telling the New York Post, quote, "There's a lot of people scared S-less because Shelley covered up for a lot of people. Many big players in the political circles are worried the dominoes are going to fall hard." Pretty big story. We'll see how long this goes on, and we have to listen to Silver's side of it. On his way out of the courthouse, Silver told reporters, quote, "The issues will be addressed, and I'm confident that will be vindicated." Well, let's see what happens. At an afternoon news conference, U.S. Attorney Bharara said, "The greedy art of secret self-reward was practiced with particular cleverness and cynicism by Silver, who never did a lick of work to earn the buckets of cash he claimed were legal referral fees." For many years, New Yorkers have asked the question, how could Speaker Silver, one of the most powerful men in all of New York, earn millions of dollars in outside income without deeply compromising his ability to honestly serve his constituents? Bharara said, "Today we prove the answer. We provide the answer. He didn't." For many years, New Yorkers have also asked the question, what exactly does Speaker Silver do to earn his substantial outside income? "Well, the head scratching can come to an end on that score too," said Bharara, "because we answer that question today as well. He does nothing. As alleged, Speaker Silver," said Bharara, "never did any actual legal work. He simply sat back and collected millions of dollars by cashing in on his public office and political influence," Bharara said. Here in California, the same system operates with a one-party Democrat, socialist, Islamist machine so above the law they have no fear whatsoever. The question that is pregnant is, why was Silver brought down now? Now, some have alleged it has something to do with Netanyahu being invited by the Republicans because Silver is deeply tied to Israel and Netanyahu, according to them. I don't think that's true, because this indictment's been in the making for many years. I think it's just coincidental. If you have some comments on this or any other topics, we're open mic today, back to open mic, not unprotected talk, because we are very focused on these topics. But let's go back to clip number one, where in 2008, Hillary had something to say about Sheldon Silver in clip one.
Speaker Shelley Silver, who has been a stalwart voice on behalf of the needs of New Yorkers.
Well, you know what you're going to get with Hillary Clinton, which is Sheldon Silver in a skirt. KSFO Phil, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Michael. I was listening to, I normally listen to you every day, and Alex Jones, and one of his...
All right, hold on now. If you're calling to promote Alex Jones, I like Alex, but I really don't want you to use my show to push another show.
No problem. I just want to let you know where this information comes from. I believe it was Harry Dent. Whatever it was an economist, and it was kind of a caveat that they were going through something, and...
What are you talking about? What is the topic?
Hillary Clinton. I believe it has to do with bringing down Hillary Clinton. The power.
Wait. What has to do with bringing down Hillary Clinton?
Bringing down Sheldon.
What does it have to do with Hillary?
Well, like that clip you just played, he was one of the key pertinent people to get her to run for Congress, and they were.
Okay, so who if the Democrats are bringing down? Remember, it's a Democrat U.S. attorney who did it. So how does that benefit another Democrat?
I think that they're going to undermine her not to run. I think Bill Clinton has messed up her.
Wait a minute. Hold it. So who is going to run?
Hillary Clinton in 2016.
I know, but who's going to run in place of her?
We will wait and see.
Come on. This is a call. It's a waste of my airtime. Listen to other shows they call with it. All right, let's go on now. WJR, Detroit. Frank, topic, please. Go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Mike, congratulations on it. I think Brett Behera is just out-seeking.
Ho, sir. Oh, we got another winner here. Look, I need some call screening today on the Savage Nation. Are you calling on a cell phone? I can't understand a word you're saying.
I said, Brett Behera, Mike, is... self-serving individual to go after and destroy anybody he wants at any time for his career to get a job for $3 million. How many Wall Street bankers is he locked up?
So you're saying that the U.S. attorney himself is no good?
Absolutely. The guy's the closest thing to Adolf Hitler you ever seen. He's destroyed people's lives at a self-promotional course that he's on.
All right, so let's back up. I know nothing about you. I know a little bit about him by what I've read. He doesn't seem to be corrupt, but did he destroy you in some way?
No, I've just seen a lot of people's lives that he's went after that are in New York.
Whose life did he ruin who was innocent?
Whose life? I don't want to say on a show, Mike, not on that, but not say innocent, but cost him millions of dollars and the indictments were let go. How many people has Brett Behera gone after at Wall Street, at Goldman Sachs, or Bank of America that were culpable and got criminal indictments? They paid billions.
Right, but let's look at the Sheldon Silver story. He charges him with $4 million in graft, and he outlines it. He shows the secret bank accounts, et cetera. They found the records of the real estate firm's payments by looking at S. Silver ESQ account. You can see all of these sums that were sent to him. I mean, this is black and white here. It doesn't seem like he's making it up.
All right, this is one guy, but how many have got through the net that he didn't prosecute?
All right, so what you're saying is he's not as, honest as I think. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it's selective enforcement, Mike, because a guy goes after who he wants, targets who he wants.
Well, wait a minute. Sheldon Silver is not a nobody. He's the second most powerful Democrat in New York State.
He is, but just like you said, the man's 70 years old. He's been in there raping the city of New York for years. Why wasn't something done earlier? The feds knew about this.
All right, well, that's the real question. Why now? Why did they suddenly take down this power broker yesterday? Why yesterday, which is almost coincidentally the same day that the Republicans, a day after Republicans invited Netanyahu to Congress, and Obama went crazy over that? You don't think it's connected, do you?
Why have we turned our back on Israel? Absolutely. Israel's been our greatest ally, and all of a sudden now we're sitting here rubbing hands with Iran. ISIS. I've been listening to your show, Doctor. You're right on. America.
Yeah, why is Pelosi suddenly attacking Republicans who want to put sanctions on Iran? When did she suddenly become anti-Israel? When did Pelosi suddenly step out of the AIPAC umbrella? When did she suddenly become so tough and suddenly join the Iranians? When did that happen to Pelosi?
Who knows, Mike? Who knows if this woman is?
How do the winds change so quickly that stalwart Democrats who once supported Israel are now attacking those who support Israel and suddenly supporting Iran? How is it possible that Pelosi could do this overnight?
Number one thing, Mike, I'm going to say is let you go, not to waste your airtime. It says, God bless America. As long as we were there and we were Israel's ally, God's chosen country, I know we're not trying to put any kind of spin on it, but if we turn our back on Israel in this country, we're going to see the demise monetarily and the destruction in this country. It's already here. Remember one.
All right. I don't think your sentiment is only yours or yours alone, to put it that way. That's to say, of course, a caveat has to go with it, which is Israel is about as corrupt a nation as you could ever find, incidentally. Because if you think there's corruption here, you're right. But if you want to live in the dream world that Israel's clean because it says Israel and it's a Jewish state, you're wrong. It's as mired in corruption as the worst Democrat machine New York has ever seen, by the way. Everyone knows that. So let's not look to Israel for any hope in terms of a clean nation. I think Israel's falling apart, frankly, because of the corruption, if you want to know the truth. You know, I saw something the other day that disturbed me, and I said, maybe I have this thing completely wrong. See, it shook me up. I read that Obama was furious that the Republicans had invited Netanyahu to speak after he had given his thundering State of the Union address Tuesday night, where he said he's not going to let Congress, he doesn't want Congress to impose sanctions on Iran for their nuclear program. And it was shocking, actually, to hear this, because Congress was ready to, impose sanctions on Iran to stop them from developing a nuclear weapon. And all of a sudden, Obama comes out and says, don't put in sanctions. And right away, Pelosi and the other others line up behind Obama and say, no sanctions, no sanctions. I read something which said that a secret report was leaked, something to do with the Mossad, I couldn't follow it, which said that they don't want Congress to impose sanctions on Iran because they don't want the talks that are underway to blow up. That Israel itself does not want to have to take military action against Iran. They would rather see if diplomacy could work. I didn't know whether that was true. I didn't know whether that was a leak from our government to make Israel look bad. I didn't know if this, I couldn't follow it. But I said, holy God, maybe I got this completely wrong. Maybe it's Israel that doesn't want sanctions put on Iran, and I'm barking up the wrong tree. You see, I'm just an outsider looking in. I don't live in Washington. I don't live in power circles. I don't even know anyone in politics, to be honest with you. I'm just an educated voter who spends his 24 hours largely in the political world of looking at every article I can get my hands on, digging, doing research. I mean, that's what I'm paid to do. It's why I have a talk show that's successful. I have opinions, but I try to back it up with the facts so best I can. But, and then it reaches a point where I say, wait a minute, maybe I have this one all wrong. That was quite a curveball that I read the other day. And I wondered really who was behind it. I do know this, that Pelosi is so pissed off. The entire Democrat machine is so pissed off that the Republicans had the audacity to invite Netanyahu to America when their president, their great president, is talking to a YouTube slob who is famous on YouTube for eating some kind of disgusting food in her mouth. But here is something else that you must see. Listen to Obama in clip six attacking the police once again in clip six.
The overwhelming majority of police officers, they are doing a really tough job and they're doing it well and they're doing it professionally. What we also know is that there's still biases in our society.
Here we go.
That in split-second situations where people are having to make quick decisions.
Here we go again.
That, you know, studies have shown African-American males are seen as more threatening, which puts them in more vulnerable positions.
Did you hear this big lie again? You know, Goebbels would be proud of Barack Obama. I've never seen a man who can get away with such lies and such aspersions without blinking an eye. I've never seen anything like it. He doesn't even raise his voice. and right away smeared the police that they're killing blacks again. It's sickening. And how anyone listening to this show who is a policeman or in law enforcement, any woman who's married to law enforcement, any man who's married to law enforcement, anyone who's in law enforcement who votes Democrat, you deserve what you get. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
My Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust to protect my wealth with gold and silver. Call 800-BUYCOIN. My headline is this: Iran's foe dead. No one has put it that way. King Abdullah of Saudi Arabia died at age 90 yesterday. It's a huge story. I mean, it's a seismic shift in the world's political structure. His half-brother succeeds him, but his half-brother is not the full brother that he was, number one. And the headline that I used on michaelsavage.com says it all. Iran's foe is dead. You may not know this, but Saudi Arabia is the number one foe of the Shiite nation of Iran. And what you may not know is that Abdullah was actually the best friend Israel had in the Arab world. Well, you know, sounds odd. But behind the scenes, it was Abdullah who was really sort of Israel's best friend while not being Israel's best friend, because he has pushed for a settlement to the Israel-Palestine conflict for a very long time. Nevertheless, Abdullah is dead. And you mustn't forget that his biggest priority was to confront Iran, the Shiite powerhouse, because he was worried and is worried, well, he's dead now, about Tehran's nuclear program, as is Israel. Did you hear me? I'll tell you what he said in 2008 about nuclear and the nuclear ambitions of Iran.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE. Savage.
So the king of Saudi Arabia died the other night at age 90. His half-brother succeeds him. And before the break, I told you my headline on michaelsavage.com is this: Iran's foe dead. There's been a seismic shift in the world power structure. Why did I say that? Because Abdullah's biggest priority was confronting Iran, the Shiite powerhouse across the Gulf. He was long worried about Tehran's nuclear program, as is Israel, and apparently as is not President Obama and Nancy Pelosi and the entire Democrat establishment. They seem to want Tehran to have a nuclear weapon. But Abdullah told the United States in 08 to consider military action, quote, to cut off the head of the snake and to prevent Iran from producing a nuclear weapon, according to a leaked U.S. diplomatic memo. You didn't know any of that. So he was a rather, let us say, progressive king for that country's people, and it's hard for you to believe, because he created a Western-style university that bears his name, the King Abdullah University of Science and Technology, which opened in 09. In that university, men and women share classrooms and study together inside the campus, which is a major deal in a nation where even small talk between the sexes in public can bring a warning from the morality police. But he was very cautious in the face of the ultra-conservative Wahhabi clerics who hold near total power over that society, and in return give the al-Saud family's rule religious legitimacy. So he was a progressive in his own way, but from our point of view, obviously not so. Nevertheless, he was Iran's greatest foe, and he is now dead. Now let's move to the United States of America. Measles outbreak that started in California expanding. Now, measles was gone in the United States by and large 15 years ago. It was eradicated. But as a result of the open borders policy, it's now resurging. Its epicenter now is Disneyland. Disneyland. It started in Disneyland and starting to sweep across the nation. The reason it started in Disneyland is because of the influx of illegal aliens. We all know that. And many of the workers in Disneyland and everywhere else in California are unvaccinated, unregulated. They come in. They have diseases that were wiped out here, which are endemic in their homeland of Mexico, Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras. And now we're seeing the results of the open borders policy. TB in Massachusetts, a killer flu across America, and now measles. Now measles. It's a frightening illness to for people who've never had it. And it's particularly dangerous for the young, the old, and those with immune-compromised bodies. These are the three target groups that can really get sick and die. The young people, meaning like infants, older people, people over 60, I would guess, 70, and those with immune-compromised systems. So there we are. Thank you very much, Mr. Obama, for your lies about the open borders and how they all come here to work. The idiots of the left will not learn until they themselves are suffering from the illnesses, both societal and medical, that have been brought in. It's Obama's open borders, which is the gift that keeps on giving. It's unbelievable to me. I want to go on to something else. You're not going to read this anywhere else because the NIH and the CDC are compromised institutions. They have been for a long time. They should have warned America about the influx of illegals, the deficit they brought, the diseases they brought, on and on and on. But, of course, the CDC is no longer the Centers for Disease Control. It's a propaganda arm of the Obama administration. And the NIH is not much, not farther behind. Fauci was once a leading researcher in the AIDS epidemic. But Fauci had the nerve 3 weeks ago to say that although the flu vaccine is only 25 or 30% effective, you should take it anyway. Now, if that's not an example of corruption, I'd like to know what is. What, they produced millions of doses of it and they had to get rid of it somehow? So you, the moron guinea pig, should go get a flu shot, even though it's ineffective in about 70% of cases or more? Anyway, I'm all over the map because it's Rock and Roll Friday. I just got a list, I asked for it, of my website, michaelsavage.com. What is the amount of people who go on it? And which was the biggest month? I was shocked to find out that the biggest month of the year was August. Would you believe this? In August, I had 2.1 million page views. I don't know if that's a lot or a little. I mean, compared to big sites, it's not. Compared to most others in talk radio, it's pretty big. But I average about 2 million page views a month. And in 2014, my website had 21,800,000 page views, 12,700,000 sessions, and 3.5 million users. Is that big? Is that a good? I don't even know. A lot of people go on it, I guess. That's pretty good, I guess. Who knows what it is? I don't know. I don't know the web world that well. I've had a website for years. I don't know anything about it. I know that a lot of people find it convenient because I have good captions. I always wanted to write headlines, but I never wanted to be a journalist because I thought it was a boring job. So I skipped journalism school, so consequently my brain still works. And I have a knack for a little headline now and again. So when you read Saudi King dead, that's one headline. But my headline is Iran's foe dead. You know, stuff like that. Then there was another headline, penises on Paris catwalk. Did you see what they're doing now, the perverts? It wasn't bad enough showing the heroin look. Heroin chic, remember we heard about that? And then the skinny model thing, the anorexia, right? Now they're having men walk down with their you-know-whats hanging out. So my headline is a little different than what you might read. It's, any wonder the Muslims bomb Paris. You know, a little viewpoint from my perspective. I mean, it is an affront to most people on Earth to have men's genitals at a catwalk at a menswear show. I mean, there's a limit to what people are going to put up with. So you say, well, it was the I am Charlie. Well, now you're going to say, I am what? I am what now? You can say, this is freedom of speech? This is not freedom of speech. This is pornography. It's not what? I mean, if it's not a family radio show, I wouldn't say I am Charlie. I'd say I am something else to symbolize what a man's genital showing at a menswear catwalk is. It wouldn't be I am Charlie, it would be something else. But you can understand why anybody would be offended by this. 855-407-282 is the phone number. Here's some other headlines. Oh, here's a picture of me from yesterday. You're wondering what I did on my day off. In the middle of michaelsavage.com, I try to put up pictures now. There's going to be a new feature, the Savage Eye Camera. There is a picture of me in a black leather jacket with a green fedora, looking quite grim in the Young Museum. And that's not because I had a bad Chinese meal, because I was about to have a bad Chinese meal, and I must have had a prescience about it. I was standing in front of a priceless painting. As you know, I love to go to museums. I had an appointment in San Francisco, and I had to take the day off. But I then took the time out to go to a great museum here in San Francisco, the museum on top of the... I love this place. I forget the name of it. My mind is blanking on it. What is it called? No, it's not at the Young Museum. Get it right. You know, I look good. My pecs are... I'm working out. I'm looking better than I have in years. I really look buff there. I don't know what's going on. That's a great outfit. I really look like I'm... I don't know. I'm getting the muscles back. I don't know what this is. I'm stronger now than I was at 40. Would you believe it? Hey, you guys, don't feel it. As you get older, you get weaker. I got smarter and stronger. How's that possible? I mean, tomorrow could be over. You could read that there's a you know. But right now, I'm still sailing pretty good. I'm standing in front of a Van Gogh, Palace of the Legion of Honor, at the top of the hill. It's unbelievable, this museum. It's like going to a private collection. So, you know why I go to museums on my day off? It restores my sense of Western civilization, of history. It gives me a reason to go on thinking that, you know, but at the same time, I think, is this going to be here 50 years from now with the Muslims taking over the world? What will they do if they become a majority in America? What, burn the museums, throw the paintings into a bonfire? I mean, I really ask myself how this can go on like this. Because the generation that supports museums and the fine arts now is about, it's on the way out. And the young people don't care about it. If you ask art dealers what paintings young people with money are buying, they're buying garbage. They're buying, they're not buying fine art. They're paying fortunes for like computer generated dreck, which is what they grew up on. They're not even bidding on the great stuff. But nevertheless, so I have certain paintings now. So I go there and I'm standing in front of the Van Gogh. There's no glass between me and one of the great paintings on the earth. There's no barrier. There's not even a line that says, do not cross this line. You could put your eye right next to this Van Gogh. What's the value of it? Several hundred million dollars? I have no idea. I don't know what it's worth. It's got to be in the hundreds of millions of dollars. Maybe this small one isn't that high. I don't know. I know that Picasso's are in the hundreds of millions. A Van Gogh has to be in the hundreds of millions. This is a small Van Gogh. Who knows what it's worth? Let's say priceless. And I'm able to stand next to it, and you say, well, okay, so what's the point? Is it just materialism that you're talking about? Not really, because if you have a trained eye, as I do, for art, and you stand next to a painting, and you can tune everything out, do what Hemingway said. Go into a museum hungry. Don't eat before going to a museum. Don't go to the cafeteria down below and have wine before viewing paintings. Go in like semi-fasting, where you're really hungry and your senses are sharp. And get as close to a great painting as you possibly can, where you feel the brushstroke of the artist. You're going to feel a change in your reality. That's all I'm saying. Now, here's something I learned. You know, I was walking around. I'm going to go to the little museum thing for a minute. I'm walking around, and there was an older white lady with gray hair doing a docent tour. Now, in the past, I would have thought she knew nothing, you know, right? You're like, Arrow, what am I going to learn? Listen to, who wasn't listening to an old woman lecturing on arts? I said, you know what? Maybe I could learn something. People say, you know, at a certain point in your life, you think you know everything, which is very dangerous. I'm one of those people who doesn't think I know everything. I think I know an awful lot about certain things, but not everything by any means. And I'm an art fancier in the sense that I love to know as much as I actually just appreciate it. But I'm not like knowledgeable about when they painted, where, who they were married to, what school it's in. Like Art 101 never interested me. I liked the paintings and the sculptings. I didn't really care for the stories behind it, but now I do. So I get into this little docent tour, and she's walking around the room of the Rodin bronzes, right? I'm a bronze nut because my father used to sell bronzes, and I cleaned them. You know, I've told you about that with the cyanide and all that. So these are the great, great, great bronze statues. So they have one of the best Rodin collections in the world right here in little old San Francisco. That has not yet been polluted by the current generation of political types that frequent museums. And the woman is standing in front of a bronze of a man about, I'd say, 10 feet high on a pedestal. But he was about 10 feet tall in sculpting. And he has overly large feet and overly large hands. And I've seen this for 30 years, this particular statue. But I've never really looked at it the way she looked at it. And she said, go look at the hall, the entry hall. She said, there's a sculpting of a man over there that's only life size. But it was so well done at the time that the judges in an art contest in Paris said that Rodin must have cheated and molded it out of a living human being because nobody could have sculpted anything so well as that statue because it was too perfect. You follow what I'm saying? So then Rodin made this statue, I think it was of St. John the Baptist, in an overly large form with, she says, look at the feet, they're overly large, and the hands are overly large. And I never noticed that, but they were. They look like that of a giant. And she said the reason he did this was to prove to the judges that he was not copying it from a human being, but that he was molding it out of clay. I found that fascinating, to be honest with you. And then they restored a room from the 1700s from Paris, a drawing room, that if you love antiquities as I do, you're going to love this. Any museum, you know, you step back in time. But she said something in there that was also interesting. And again, my father used to sell candelabra. What's a candelabra? It's a piece of something that holds candles. And that's how houses were lit, obviously, before electricity was invented. And so she said, well, look at this classical room. She said they had a chandelier in the middle of the room, which the servants lit the candles. She said, notice that there are four mirrors in the room, one on each wall. I've always noticed that. Why? She said, the reason they put mirrors on the walls was to reflect the candlelight, because the candelabra itself, the chandelier, would not light the room sufficiently. And that's interesting. And then she said, notice all the gilt work on the paint, you know, like 14-karat gold gilt work. She said that was added to reflect light as well in these dark rooms. That was fascinating. I didn't know any of this. And then I left, and I went to what was my once favorite Chinese restaurant. Here we go again. Everything leads to food. I actually look forward to it. I figured it's a day off. I had an appointment I had to do. I had to get blood drawn for nothing. Then I had to do something else. Then I went to the museum. But in the back of my mind, it was all to get Chinese food. So I rushed through the museum as quickly as I could, sped down Geary Avenue to this joint that I've been going to for years. And I got to tell you, it was the worst disappointment in my life. Do they think people are stupid? They cut back on the size of the shrimp. They cut back on the size of the scallops. They fill the seafood basket mainly with celery and junk vegetables for, like, I don't know, whatever the price is. And on top of it, they serve it to me with like a syrupy, bad soy sauce, which they've never done. It smelled like cinnamon was coming out of it, like a degraded soy sauce. Just to show you how bad things were yesterday and how rough my life is. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Your Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com. It's the only company I trust for tangible assets, gold and silver. Call 800-BUY-COIN. Well, we're coming to the end of hour number two on the Savage Nation. I have another hour in most markets across America. If you're hanging on the line there, would you stay so we can hear your viewpoint? We've been talking about the corruption in New York State, the corruption in California, and a tale of two cities, how in New York they have a U.S. attorney willing to go after the corrupt Democrats and newspapers willing to report it, while in California there is no newspaper to speak of anymore. It's a wholly owned newsletter of the Democrat machine, and certainly the U.S. attorney is of no value whatsoever in these cases out here. So a tale of two cities. And then I was talking about my visit to the museum, the Palace of the Legion of Honor at San Francisco, and my viewing of Van Gogh and Rodin and others, other art objects. There are other favorite paintings that I go to as well. We also talked about Obama again attacking police, trying to put out the big lie that police pick on African-American males, again making their job more difficult than it should be and putting their lives at risk once again. We also talked about the visits to michaelsavage.com, and what I have in store is very interesting. And I mean, there's another story I'm afraid to read. Throat slit, Florida pelicans dying in serial slashings. They should catch the fishermen doing this and frankly feed them to the pelicans. They should tie them hands and foot and throw them in the water. It's sickening. Who would do this to these gorgeous animals? Who?
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage. Warning. The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of unprotected thought, borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
We glide into hour number three on the Savage Nation with Wake Up Little Susie. And there's no deeper meaning for it. I mean, what can I say? America's asleep. You're like little Susie in a theater. What's the point? It's absurd. You are like little Susie in a theater, you know. I mean, what can I say? So the first 2 hours were devoted to A Tale of Two Cities, where in New York, the second most powerful Democrat was indicted by the U.S. attorney, while in California there have been no indictments whatsoever because there's no newspapers and there's no there. California is a nation unto itself with no newspapers, no U.S. attorney, a seamless propaganda political machine that steals at will in the minds of anyone with an IQ above 90. So the phone number here is 855-407-282. We'll continue with all the news of the day, all the breaking news during this hour, and take your calls, of course, as we do every day. Let's begin with, there's so many different topics, I don't know where to begin. What, Iran? The king is dead? The measles epidemic that Obama brought in with his children from Honduras that no one's talking about? You're supposed to say you don't know where it came from? Measles was eliminated in America 15 years ago. And then as a result of the open borders, Mexicans were coming in unvaccinated, bringing in third world diseases. I try to warn you with immigrants and epidemics, nothing's going to change until one of the politicians' children or grandchildren dies from an illness, God forbid. God forbid. Brought in by the illegals. Now, they'll never tell you that they know what happened, but behind the scenes, they all know what's happening because they're smart enough to rob us blind. They're smart enough to protect themselves. They know where the diseases are coming from. And let me tell you something else, something I coined 15 years ago or 20. Microbes do not discriminate. They don't know if you're black. They don't know if you're white. They don't know if you're gay, straight. They don't know if you're rich. They don't know if you're poor. Microbes are very democratic in that regard. They don't discriminate. They can get you if you have 18 Gulfstreams and 55,000 post offices. They have no idea who you are, microbes. And then we talked about Michael Savage's day off yesterday, where I stopped in the museum at the top of the hill, looked at some Van Goghs, some Rodins, a bad Chinese meal on Geary Street and 23rd Avenue in a place I've been going to for years that's gone downhill. I don't know what's going on with restaurants. I do know what's going on. The price of foods has gone up, and so the restaurants are cutting back on quality and quantity and covering it up, and the people just go about their merry. What can you do? So they cover it with sauces, and they drink a lot of alcohol. They don't know what they're eating, but these places can't go on like this. Have you noticed that whatever your restaurant may be, that the food quality and quantity has gone down? Places I've eaten for 30 years who know me and know I could kill their restaurant with one bad review will cheat me on a vegetable, a piece of fish. I don't understand this. Are they that desperate? I don't get this. Anyway, what's the difference? Well, I don't know. Everything's a difference. So what's going to happen now that Netanyahu is coming here and Obama's mad and all of a sudden, everyone's mad at Israel. All the Democrats who pretended to be clients of AIPAC are now spitting in the face of Israel and Netanyahu. What a change there's been under this fabulous president. The question is, how will it affect Jewish voters? The answer is it won't. Just as Jewish voters in New York will back Sheldon Silver, even if he's in prison, they'll say that it was a result of racism that they arrested him. They will back Obama even if he bombed Israel. If Obama launched a strike off an aircraft carrier against Israel, the Jews of New York would still vote for Obama. They'd say, don't worry, he has a reason for it. Are you kidding? What are you talking about? He knows what he's doing. Say, but he just bombed Israel. Nah, never mind. He knew what he was doing. What do you want, the Republicans to take over? A curse if that happened. At least it's one man's opinion. That's how crazy the world is and why it's so hard to change anything. That's why I was shocked when I saw the second most powerful Democrat in New York was arrested. I couldn't believe that there he was with the black hat of the religious Jew, you know, sitting there like a victim in the federal car with his hands cuffed behind his back like a common criminal, sitting there like a victim being taken away by the Nazis. No, I expect that any day now. Marches, protests, references to the Holocaust, anti-Semitism. In other words, the same racket that Al Sharpton uses and the others in the civil rights racket, you're going to see soon with Sheldon Silver. It's the way all ethnic groups operate. They have certain lodestones that they refer to get away with their shenanigans. So very soon we will see the black hats marching in the streets saying that this was this was that. He's a good man. He helped us. People come out to show what a fine man Sheldon Silver is, that he lived a quiet life, that they made the whole thing up. It's anti-Semitism. It's the Hitler is back. Well, you'll see it's coming as sure as I'm sitting here. I mean, am I offending you? I don't mean to offend you by telling you what I say behind the scenes. This is what I would say to friends if I had any. But since I have no friends, I say it on the radio show, which opens up no lines at 855-407-28 to no lines at all. Let's go to some of the callers. WABC, always broadcasting. I can't use the C word. There's nothing good in it with a C. What? ABC, always. Okay, thank you. You saved me there. WABC, always broadcasting content. Well, you just saved me, James. All right, Scott, welcome to the Savage Nation topic, please.
I would like to continue talking to you about art a little bit.
Go ahead.
Are you familiar with the Barnes Foundation?
I am not.
Okay, well, the Albert Barnes was a doctor in Philadelphia. He wasn't a practicing physician, but he invented something called Argyrol. That was a drug that was put into the eyes of children to prevent them from getting syphilis when they were born.
Oh, he developed the silver?
Yeah. And he became right. Extremely wealthy from that in the early 1900s.
Wow.
And he started buying art. And he was a person who didn't believe in the stock market, so when the crash came, he didn't lose a dime. And he used all that money to buy art. He sent people to Europe, and they bought. He amassed the biggest personal collection of Impressionist and modern art in the world.
And where is it? It's all in Philadelphia?
Well, it was in a place called Marion, which is a little town right on the edge of Philadelphia, western Philadelphia.
All right, and, so the purpose of, what is the point of your call, please? I'm curious.
Well, you start talking about docents, and my daughter is a docent at the Barnes Foundation.
That's very nice. Now, did she study art history?
No, she didn't. She has a degree in philosophy and a master's in ethics. And
well, I'm very impressed with the knowledge of Western civilization that I see amongst the knowledgeable docents. That's why I mentioned this in the museum. And I often wonder, is this going to survive 50 years with the influx of illegal aliens who don't speak English, don't know anything about our culture, don't know anything about Western civilization? How are our museums supposed to survive?
Well, you know, this is not a museum. This was an educational institution that he put together to use art to teach people about...
No, I understand. You're talking about your daughter's... I get it, and that's fine. But I'm raising a bigger question, which is when I walk through museums with great art from Europe, I ask myself, will this survive 50 years? What do you think of that?
I think it may, because I'll tell you why. I have another child who's my son, who just opened an art gallery in Manhattan. And his specialty is essentially street art, modern and contemporary street art. And, you think of graffiti or whatever as being something that's ugly, but when you get into it, there's a high degree of creativity and...
Yeah, but you're making the argument in the opposite. I'm saying that the generation of art in America is so rapid that street graffiti is now considered fine art. How are the fine arts going to survive 50 years?
Well, I think that, there's beauty there, and I think that
Yeah, but I guess you're not hearing me. See, here's the thing. Discipline and skill are a little different than letting it all hang out and just smearing dreck on a canvas and calling it art. I understand that free-flowing paint or whatever can be very interesting to look at and easy to make, but how do you compare that to a great masterpiece? You know that the difference is not by leagues, but it's in a different universe of training, of skill, of discipline. You can't make a comparison and say they're on equal footing. Just because people like street art doesn't mean that it's equal to that of the great artists.
I would agree with you there.
That's all I'm saying. And so therefore I ask, how is civilization, Western civilization, supposed to survive 50 more years? And I thank you very much for catching, at least jumping in on that. I mean, I smear paint on paper now. I do watercolors. I use acrylics. I wouldn't show it to anybody. Some of them are good. You know, I could show them on the website one day, but I consider them what I'm doing is art therapy. I feel sometimes as though I'm in a nut house and I'm allowed to use paints to instead of using medication. And that's what I do at night sometimes. I don't want to watch TV. I get out the colors and I draw and then I paint. And you say, okay, so fine, but it's for my own entertainment. I would never consider it to be art in that sense. But some looking at it would say, holy God, that guy Savage is amazing. Look at what he's done in just moving some colors around. I wouldn't say that. And yet I will tell you this, looking back and when I was painting in the 1980s, I will show these one day just to show you what I'm talking about. I consider it infantile watercolors. They're infantile watercolors. Doesn't mean that they're insignificant to me. They gave me a great deal of satisfaction. I'll give you an example. I found one of the paintings that I did in 1982 when I was going through my old work. And it was of a man sitting on a bench wearing a cloak. The man was a size of about 1 inch. And on the right side of the panel is a wine bottle of about 8 inches big, Chateau whatever written on it. And it's just a man staring at a wine bottle. I thought that was an interesting picture. I have another picture that I did in 1984 of a man and a woman in a car with two children in the back outside of a tropical hotel, and the car has no wheels on it, and they're just staring straight ahead, driving around Honolulu. I mean, I thought that was interesting. So I've always used these primitive postcards as an entertainment for myself, and then I stopped painting, and yet I started again this last, I think, Thanksgiving to entertain myself. Again, it's an expression. Would I consider it great art? No. No, but I can guarantee you as I stand here that if I ever wanted to sell my originals, I guarantee you I could sell my originals as a collection and there'd be someone who would understand the value, but I'm not going to. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. I'm just giving you a little conversation here. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Hey, our Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com. The only company I trust for wealth insurance, gold and silver. Call 800-BUY-COIN. Enough already. No one even knows what I'm talking about. Welcome back to the show, Rock and Roll Friday. Topics of this, topics of that. This is going to be a car weekend. You know, here's the problem. I bought the Dodge, I don't even know the name of it. I forget already. Hellcat. It's a drag racer. It's shocking. I took it out the other day and someone gave me a block job left and right. You ever get one of those? On a two-lane road, and you got the little old ladies in both lanes, they calculate it so that you can't get around them. I don't mind they go slow, but get in the damn right lane. What are you blocking me for? I'm a nervous driver. I mean, I'm going a little fast than the speed limit. I get a block job. I tend to get agitated, and I tend to react when they give me a blockaroo. So I kind of calculated how to do it, and I slid over to the right. And waited for the aperture to open sufficient to push the needle through the eye of the camel's head, or something like that. And I gave a little floor job. Well, that thing gave a fishtail. They're naturally, you know, in what they do in the Bay Area, the lights go on, the liberal headlights go on, like that's supposed to. The car was so fast. I want to take it out when I can drive it somewhere, really. Then I got the poor Jaguar sitting in the garage, a 1970 XKS. It looks sad now. She was like the darling of the garage for her year. Now she's sitting there, her headlights are hanging low. I have to say to her, listen, you'll be okay. I'll drive you this Saturday. I'll take you for a ride. I'll take you for a ride. I'll take you. It's crazy. I mean, I don't know what to do with these cars. I like cars. So in the last hour, I was talking about food going downhill in restaurants. Everywhere I turn. I mean, forget about shrimp. You know they're polluted shrimp. You can die from them. I'll eat Gulf shrimp. There's one restaurant that'll serve me Gulf shrimp. They taste like shrimp. But the rest, you know it's sewer garbage. Michael on line 6, welcome to the Savage Nation. You're a chef, I understand.
Yes, Reverend Doctor, I am.
Thank you. Thank you, parishioner. So where are you a chef?
I'm a chef in Charleston, South Carolina.
And that's a beautiful city. But what do you notice going on in the business?
Well, I know that the business is flooded with nothing but illegals. And I'll tell you that is why the restaurants you know and I know to love are all going downhill. No one.
What do you mean? You mean the restaurant, you mean the chefs have become illegals who don't know food? Is that it?
Well, yeah, they're eliminating chef positions and making them into pseudo restaurant managers.
Okay, so they're taking busboys and telling them, here's a frying pan, make a meal?
Here's what we used to do. If you come close, good job. We'll pay you a quarter of what you used to pay.
Oh, you're breaking up. Well, I'll tell you what I've noticed. The Italian restaurants in the San Francisco area are not Italian restaurants. And I'm not knocking Mexican cuisine. Some of it's good, but it's all Mexital. The problem is that a lot of the guys who are cooking for themselves because they eat for free in the restaurants. And so what they're doing is they're using a lot of chili pepper in Italian meals, which doesn't work. Chili pepper doesn't belong in an Italian dish. I'm sorry. A little bit, maybe. A little spice, yes. I mean, I know what Fra Diablo should taste like, and it doesn't taste like a taco. Again, I'm not knocking Mexican food. Some of it's high-end and beautiful. And I've eaten high-end Mexican food years ago. I really ate in a high-end Mexican restaurant. I was shocked at the difference between that and, you know, let's say what we're used to, a taco. It was the same thing with anything else. But most of the Italian food in the Bay Area tastes like it's from Guadalajara. Tijuana, really. It's not to my taste, that's all.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282. Savage.
What would you give to turn the clock back, to have an America that you had hope and faith in? You felt confident in the country. You knew that no nation could conquer you. You were sitting on top of the world as an American. And take a look at how far we've fallen under this character in the White House. Take a look at what we've become. Unbelievable to me. Anyway, that's why I don't even want to talk about it right now. It's heartbreaking. Let's go to some callers on the set. Play that song again. I interrupted it. What would you give if you were looking forward to a party tonight instead of sitting alone in a house with a TV tray? Like the average Republican, sitting alone. His wife left him. His children don't talk to him. It's just you in the television set watching old World War II movies. Living in the pit. I mean, that's how liberals think you are, that you have no life. They're probably right, too. WFTL in Fort Lauderdale. Danny, welcome to the Savage Nation.
My subject is the art.
Okay, good. I like art. Let's do art. Go ahead. Question or comment?
I graduated from Jamaica High School about 10 years after you did.
Was it still there, or they burnt it down by then?
Oh, it was a top-notch high school. I tell people about, well, I had to have accounting. I had to have business law. I mean, the art class, the art teacher, I like to say professor, because he used to spend his summers in Europe taking Kodachrome slides at the great works.
I didn't take art in high school because it was the weirdos were in art, like the girls that were always, like, very tall with hair under their arms, and they had B.O. I wouldn't go near it.
Well, actually, when I graduated, you had to take an art course.
I avoided it. I knew that they were the crackpots. I was wrong. At the time, I avoided the artists like the plague. One of them became a very famous rock and roll singer. One of them, you know, he was like this Schmendrick guy, but he played the guitar. No one wanted to talk to him. He wasn't popular. He had a hit record that took him all over the world. He was a huge success for 40 years.
Is that right?
No, I won't mention his name because he's a psycho on the left, one of the worst. This is the thing I don't understand. Why do artists have to be left-wing? What is wrong with them?
Well, I think it takes a certain amount of mental illness to be an artist.
Well, okay, then count me in, because I definitely have a streak of art in me. You know, that's how I do this show in such an artistic manner every day. But, you know, I write and I do a little painting, so there's a part of me that's very right brain, not left brain in that regard. And I'm glad of it, because it's what keeps me young and alive. I mean, without it, I'd be like probably playing golf and talking about deflated footballs all day.
Right. Did you ever see Rembrandt's painting?
Who?
Rembrandt. Night Watch.
Of course I've seen Rembrandt. Yeah, but I know it's not as good as a street artist in the Bronx who takes a can of spray paint and sprays the side of a building. You know, if an ethnic sprays the side of a building with a can of paint, you know he's superior to Rembrandt.
Oh, my.
No, you know that? Come on. I mean, you know that by now. If you say otherwise, Al Sharpton's liable to pick at your business. Next caller, KSFO, San Francisco. John, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind? Topic, please.
Yes, hi, Michael. I've been interested in the vegan food diet. I was curious as to your opinion, and do you have any good meals, any good restaurants?
All right, I'll try not to be sarcastic about veganism. It's a lot of people who are, like, fuzzy in their thinking. they eat no animal products, okay? No, that's, I've seen this my whole life. Vegetarianism is fine if you know how to balance your foods. But they go a step further. Vegans will not even eat, not only not meat, but they will not eat eggs, no dairy products, any other animal-derived substances. On the face of it, it's an extremely deficient diet. And what the problem is that human beings happen to need certain nutrients they're not going to get from that diet unless the diet is carefully constructed, unless the diet is supplemented with very specific supplements. People are going to find themselves with very low energy, very deficient in certain nutrients that they're not going to get unless they do eat animal products. It's that simple. And here's the problem for most vegans that they don't know about. Basic anatomy. The human being is not designed solely to eat vegetables, despite what they may think. Yes, you can be a vegetarian, but you have to be very careful to get a complete protein, and that's not that easy to do if you're purely a vegetarian. It's almost impossible as a vegan unless you're supplementing your diet with amino acids. So let's look at the human being. How do you know what you're designed to eat? I want you to take your two thumbs, if you're listening to the Savage Nation and you're a skeptic, take your thumbs and put them inside your mouth. I don't mean suck your thumbs like a classic Bay Area liberal, but I mean take your thumbs and put them up against your two front sharp teeth. Those teeth are known as canine teeth. And the reason you have canine teeth is that you were made to rip and tear flesh. Now you have the grinding teeth in the back and the tearing flesh teeth in the front, which means you're an omnivore. You're evolutionarily evolved to eat both animal and plant products and grains, boys and girls. That is what your body was designed to do by God, by nature, or by Gaia, whatever you choose. Now, I see kids eating, what do you call it? You go to these Japanese restaurants, sushi. I see a lot of parents buying their kids. Go to a Japanese restaurant. I don't know anything against Japanese food, but they're very low in protein generally, unless you're going to eat the fish or the pork, kontatsu, whatever it's called. You've got to eat some protein. Now, I see parents taking kids into Japanese restaurants, and I see these children eating sushi, vegetable sushi. The child is nutritionally deficient on the face of it. It's that simple. They don't know it, though. They somehow think sushi is a health food. It's not a health food. It's a cheap snack from Japan, that's what it is. A rice ball, basically, with a vegetable stuck in the middle of it for a poor worker. What do you think sushi is? Now you add to it the salty soy sauce, and what do you think you're getting? A health food? You're not getting a health food. So you got to be very careful, and you have to understand that the human being is designed to need certain foods. It is true that vegan diets are higher in dietary fiber, higher in magnesium, higher in folic acid, higher in vitamin E, vitamin C. That is true. And they're higher in phytochemicals, and they're lower in calories. They're lower in saturated fat. They're lower in cholesterol. They're lower in long-chain omega-3 fatty acids, vitamin D, calcium, zinc, and B12. I know that. However, the fact of the matter is that eating a vegan diet is no guarantee of health. Because most plant foods do not provide vitamin B12, which is produced by microorganisms such as bacteria. And vegans must eat B12 fortified foods. I've seen many vegetarians who look like they're starving to death. And many vegans look like they're starving to death. It happens to be a fact of life. And I know from having raised children, this is the truth. I don't care what liberal, Republican, doesn't matter what you are, conservative. You follow this truth. You take a child and you start raising that child as a vegan or a vegetarian, and then you put that child at a dinner table with a family that has, let's say, a plate of chicken on the table, and their kids eat chicken or hamburger. You can see that child who's been starved to death on a vegan diet or vegetarian diet. Their eyes widen. They almost salivate, and they literally want to rip the chicken off the table because they're deficient. They're starving to death. They have to have some flesh. It's that simple. And that's the whole story in a nutshell. 855-407-2822 is the phone number. This is the Savage Nation. As you can see, the topics are varied. It's not just Democrat, Republican, footballs. Let's go to KCMO in Kansas City. Mike, give us your topic, please. What's on your mind?
I've got an answer for your question about why artists are so many oftentimes liberal. That's because in order to be an artist, you have to have a very powerful imagination. Well, to ever believe that left-wing liberal doctrine and policies could produce a happy, successful, vibrant society also takes a tremendously good imagination.
Well, it's true. However, there's another conflict here. You've got these zillionaire Hollywood types, like Sean Penn comes to mind, or Robert De Niro. Why are they so left of center? They're very intelligent, rich people. How do they not understand what their policies are producing?
They probably...
There's no answer to it, because liberalism is a mental disorder. You see, you stumbled into a cul-de-sac. There was no answer. At the end of the day, when you can't answer the question, it's because liberalism is a mental disorder. That's all. Many people suffer mental disorders, and not to be shunned or laughed at. You don't have to put a leper's bell on them, but you have to understand that you don't rely upon them for thinking. Obama gave a State of the Union speech from another universe. He lives in his own world. What world was he speaking about? Everyone had a job. Health is better. Let's see, where peace reigns throughout the world. Racism has disappeared under him. Everything's coming up roses. What world does that man live in? I don't live in that world. I mean, the opposite is true wherever you turn. It's that simple. But that's neither here nor there. Art takes a lot more than creativity and than imagination. It takes an awful lot of perspiration. They used to say that genius consists of 96% perspiration and 4% inspiration. That's what I read when I was a kid. That set me straight into thinking I could walk around and just blow dope and I'll be a genius. That I'll wind up a genius on the earth. It doesn't work that way. No, sir. You can't just smear paint on a canvas and think everyone's going to flock to your doorway or spray paint the wall and think, yeah, some have done it. Because in New York, there are no standards at all for anything. So why should art be in a different standard? Why? There's no standards in art. So how would they know the difference between a sculpture done by Rodin and a guy who takes a piece of mud and turns it into a hard object? How would they know the difference? Anyway, that's I'm holding forth today. It's Friday afternoon. It's the Cafe Savage. And make believe here. I used to do this on my show. I like that segment. We'd play the sound of cups and a cafe machine, espresso. You'd hear the hissing tss, and cups clinking and glasses. And I'd say, "Welcome to Cafe Savage." And I was like the patron of a cafe. And as such, you would. No, that's too fancy for my cafe. I wouldn't play that music. That's for the Carlisle Hotel at night when all the drunks come in pretending that they're wine drinkers. Mine would be a little different. Maybe it would be. Whatever. The thing is, usually the guy who owns the cafe is holding forth. He's the patron, and you want to hear what he has to say. And you pretty much watch your step in what you say, because you know he'll throw you out if he doesn't like you. That's more or less Cafe Savage. It's like talk radio. If we don't like it, we turn you off. We press the button, and you're dead. You're dead in the water. So it's like being in my cafe. I'm just holding forth on the week. It's a Friday. I went to the museum. Sheldon Silver was indicted. We were comparing the two cities, San Francisco and New York, how there's never been an indictment here because the Democrat machine has no opposition here in the form of a Zero newspaper, which is a newsletter of the corrupt Democrat machine, while New York has vibrant newspapers. They're left-wing newspapers, but they're vibrant. They have reportage. New York has vibrant reportage in liberal newspapers. San Francisco has no newspapers at all. They are mimeograph sheets put out by the Democrat machine in San Francisco. Everybody knows that. 855-400-7282 is the phone number. Any topic is fair game. Any question? Let's go to George on WABC in New York City. Go ahead, please, George.
Michael, America is headed for a demographic winter.
Hold it. You did this yesterday. We hung up on you. Aren't you the same one with the demographic?
No, I'm a little different.
Nah, it's the same demographic. Mean, what'd you read this somewhere? I mean, you must have read it as a talking point from the U.S. Nazi Party.
No, see, now you're calling names.
Oh, come on. I'm sorry. I heard it yesterday. I understand the demographic winter. I get it. I know, but who are you going to blame for that? If white girls don't want to have babies and white boys don't have the guts to be fathers, what should I do about it? What do you want me to do about it if white men don't want to get married and be a father? It gets too hard for them. What do you want the girls to do if they can't find a man to marry? What do you want the girls to do? Their instincts are to have babies, but the guys are not there. They may be macho, they may be men, they may be able to have sex, but they can't have children because they don't have the guts to be a father. Being a father is the toughest job a man can ever take on. You ask anyone who's stuck it out. any man who has raised children through thick and through thin knows that being a father is the toughest job for a man, which is why all traditional societies pride themselves on large families. It's the mark of a real man. And that's the mark of the death of our civilization, that the men are not having children. I don't mean there aren't exceptions, but by and large, most white men will not have children. They will not get married. They will not commit to women. I don't blame the women. The women haven't changed as much as the men have. That's my opinion. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
My Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com. It's the only company I trust to protect my wealth. Call 800-BUY-COIN. Well, as the Friday edition of the Savage Nation draws to a close, let's go to the website of the same name, michaelsavage.com, your home for borders, language, and culture, and see the headlines. Okay? Top right, Al Gore's utopia. He wants to spend $90 trillion to ban cars from every major city in the world. Throats slit, Florida pelicans dying in serial slashings. I would catch the person or persons doing it. I would throw them to the crabs, anyone who does this to this beautiful creature. I love pelicans, one of my favorite birds. Sheldon Silver's wealth, a well-kept secret from the New York Post. The Savage Paul Revere Society's What Does It Mean to Be an American Essay Contest. In the middle is a picture of Michael Savage with a green fedora, a black leather jacket, in front of a priceless Van Gogh yesterday at the Palace of the Legion of Honor on my day off. To show you I don't golf on my day off. I mean, some do, I don't. Actually, I decided that if I do ever retire, which is unlikely, I'll probably die first, suddenly and unexpectedly. But if I ever retired, I would not spend it on a golf course. I couldn't imagine anything more boring in my life. But I probably would take docent tours of museums and learn more about art, amongst other things. On the right side, any wonder the Muslims bombed Paris is the headline, and it's males' genitals are now being shown at a menswear catwalk show. They're having it all hang out. And you ask yourself, how much further can a society degenerate than Paris, right? How Silver's arrest threatens Cuomo, New York Post. Read the criminal complaint against Sheldon Silver. We have an entire PDF of it. You can't believe what this gonif got away with. That's a Jewish word for crook. Senator husband profits for 15 years from federal funds, says Page Six. New York Post is on to Feinstein and Blum. There's not a new newspaper in the Bay Area or California that dares touch the untouchables. And yet the New York Post brings up this untouchable story. How do you like that?
Savage.